couple of things we might mention. Tonight is our fifth Sunday singing. Stefan will be directing that. And so come back for our fifth Sunday singing and our service tonight. And also Anita Bruce needs to be put on the sick list as one who is out sick. Last Lord's Day, we talked about Barnabas, the son of encouragement. And we talked about Barnabas' characteristics, that he was a caring and a generous person. He commended others. He recommended Paul, for example, over Jerusalem. He saw potential in people like his own cousin, John Mark, you remember, when he had failed in his journey, and yet he saw potential that he could be used in the future. He was a motivator. He was one who urged faithfulness. He was evangelistic, stood boldly for the truth. Those are some of the reasons why he may have been called the son of encouragement. One of the points we made about Barnabas was he's the kind of man that we would like to have as a friend, or at least as a member here in the local church, because sometimes we want some of what he has to offer. We want some of that encouragement. I wish we had more friends like Barnabas, more people like Barnabas. You may be thinking, I'd love to have a Barnabas around because I need what Barnabas has to offer. And I want to build on that, at least connect to that lesson, as we suggest that there are times that we all need encouragement and we need comfort. That's because we get discouraged. And we need a Barnabas around to encourage us, to see the potential in us. We get discouraged. For some, that discouragement just may be something minor. It may be a day or two that you feel down for some reason. And it's kind of a minor discouragement, and the next day or two you're up and going and you're just fine. But for others, it may be a state of depression that they need encouragement. There are legitimate reasons for being discouraged. We'll see some of those. Not everybody who is so-called discouraged has a legitimate reason for that, but there are legitimate reasons for discouragement, which means if that be the case, there is a legitimate need for encouragement. And so you may be one saying, you know what, I need encouragement, all right? It very well may be that there is a legitimate need for encouragement in your life. I may need that encouragement. On the flip side of that, I want to suggest that sometimes when people say, you know what, I am discouraged, that's often a code for simply saying, I know I'm not doing right, but it's your fault. How does that work? How many times have you known somebody, maybe they quit attending services and they haven't been for 2 or 3 weeks, and you go and you visit or you call and you ask, well, what's going on? Well, I am discouraged. Well, tell me what the problem is. Well, people haven't been real friendly to me, or I was slighted, or I was overlooked. You see, the problem is I've quit serving the Lord. I know I'm not doing right, but it's your fault. I'm discouraged. That often is the case. That becomes a code. Let's talk about how discouragement works, and I ask you to turn to Numbers 21. And I'm not so much interested in that last scenario I just talked about, though that is the case. But I'm going to spend more time in introduction than I normally do because I want to build some principles on which then we're going to launch from. And so we've talked about there is a legitimate need for discouragement. Let's talk about, or for encouragement. Let's talk about how discouragement works. So let's look at Numbers 21, 4 and 5. Numbers chapter 21, 4 and 5. Now they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. And we'll stop there. I'll come back to verse 5 in a moment. So you keep your Bible open there. Here was the situation that we're talking about. What is the circumstance here in Numbers 21? Well, what's going on in Numbers 21? Israel had been forbidden to pass through Edom. They're making their way through the wilderness. They've come out of Egypt, make their way through the wilderness, and they're making their way onto the promised land. They haven't got there yet. And they're forbidden to pass through Edom. So let's back up one chapter. Chapter 20. Beginning actually at verse 14, but I'm going to start at verse 20. Numbers 20, verse 20. Then he said, you shall not pass through. So Edom came against them with many men and with a strong hand. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through the territory. So Israel turned away from him. They were forbidden to pass through Edom. So here's the circumstance. They are apparently, we don't know exactly where Mount Hor is. They're different Atlas has put it at different places, different scholars located at different places. It really doesn't matter for our point. But there appeared Mount Hor near Kadesh Barnea. This is Edom, and they are going and are planning on passing through to make their way up on this side of the Salt Sea and then enter into the land of Canaan. That's where they're headed. That's where they're journeying. This is a much shorter route just to make their way across Edom. But Edom says, no, you can't come. You can't pass through Edom. You're not going to come through Edom with us. And so what do they have to do? They have to make a long journey around. Notice back at verse 4 that they have to go by way of the Red Sea. The Red Sea's down here. You don't see the Red Sea. But this is part of it that sticks up in this gulf. So they had to go down toward the Red Sea, like you're going toward the Red Sea is what the meaning of that. They had to go the long way around and make their way up the other side. That's a long journey. And the text says this at verse 4. Let's go back to our text at verse 4. The people became discouraged, but it doesn't say they became discouraged. They became very discouraged. The English Standard, the New American Standard, says they became impatient. Well, no wonder. I would too. Things are not going like they planned. Let's go back here just for a moment. They planned to go across this way, and they had to go all the way around. Things are not going like they had planned. Things are not turning out like they had envisioned. And they became impatient. This is not what they want. They don't want to wait this out and travel all the way around Edom and go up the other side. And the people became very discouraged. They became impatient. They're not getting what they want when they want it. And they're very discouraged. Now they became discouraged. Are you reading with me at verse 4? Because of the way. I'm reading from the New King James, and it says at verse 4, they became discouraged on the way. But the American Standard, which is a little more wooden, literal translation, New American Standard, King James footnote says they became discouraged because of the way. That's not the same thing. They didn't just get discouraged while they're on the way. They got discouraged because of the way. Well, no wonder. The way they planned to go was the shorter distance. Now they've got to go a long way around. And it's not a pleasant way. It's rocky. It's stony. It's dusty. It's desert. It's barren. This isn't a pleasant trip. This took longer. Not as they planned. It's a rough way. And they become discouraged because of the way. Because of now what is their lot, they are discouraged. Now watch this. Look at verse 5. Watch this now. Watch what happens. Because they became discouraged because of the way, verse 5 says this, and the people spoke against God and against Moses and said, why have you brought us out to Egypt to die in the wilderness where there is no food and water and our souls loathe this worthless bread? They became discouraged because of the way, and now they've turned against God and they're complaining against God. Which verse 5 says that led to their complaining. Not only are they turning against God, but they're complaining against God and against His people. That is, against Moses. Why did you do this? Why did you lead us in this direction? You left us out here to die. And for that reason, God sent them fiery serpents. And they were bitten and smitten by the fiery serpents. But I want you to notice this progression here that we just saw. And perhaps this fits our lives today. This is how discouragement works. There may be a circumstance where things are not going your way. Things are not going like you had planned. In fact, it turns out to be harder than you expected. Have you ever been in a circumstance like that when suddenly things turn, and this is harder than what I thought? This is not what I bargained for. This is not the direction I thought I was going. I didn't think we were going to have to make this long journey around Edom. I thought we'd go through where it was more populated instead around the desert there. I wasn't planning on that. Things are not going like we'd planned. Things are a little harder. Things are a little rougher. We become discouraged and impatient because this is not what I want. I'm not getting what I want when I want it. And consequently, we may turn away from God in that midst, and then we say, you know what, I'm discouraged. Discouraged because this is not what I bargained for. I thought things were going to be different than this. I didn't think I was going to be in this struggle that I have. And then we start our complaining and our grumbling. And consequently, we have a need for encouragement. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 7 and verse 6. We're still in introductory thought. And so we're talking about how discouragement works. Now let's talk about some of the answer for that. And that is, God comforts those who are downcast. Paul talks about how he had waited for Titus to come and give a report of how the first letter was received over at Corinth. And we were comforted by that report, he said. God who comforts the downcast, he said. That's how he describes God. Now, the New Century Translation says that's God comforts the troubled. New American Standard, the depressed. The New Living Translation says the discouraged. God comforts those who are discouraged. God comforts those who are depressed. God comforts those who are troubled. Are you troubled, depressed? Or perhaps maybe you're discouraged somehow? Are you downcast? God comforts them. God comforts you. Here's what I learned from that. I conclude from that, the comfort and encouragement that I need, God gives. Isn't this interesting? That's why I talked about how discouragement works. Discouragement often causes people to turn away from God, the very source that gives us the encouragement we need. And so I get discouraged and turn away from God, and I just quit. I just quit going. I quit going to church. I quit reading my Bible, quit reading my scriptures because I'm discouraged. And I've turned away from the very source that gives me the encouragement I need. And here's what I conclude from that. The comfort and encouragement I need, God gives that. One of the avenues through which he gives that is his people, because God tells us that we're to comfort the faint-hearted. That's not the same as the unruly. These are people who are discouraged. Not the same as those who are weak. They're discouraged. God says, comfort them. Barnabas was the man who did that. He knew how to comfort people. He knew how to encourage people. So with that in mind, let's talk about encouragement and comfort. Three things we want to notice about courage and comfort. Encouragement. You say, I need encouragement. You say, I'd like to give some encouragement to people. And at times I need it myself. Three things we want to notice about encouragement and comfort. Here's the first. Let's talk about what it means to encourage someone. When you say, I need encouragement, what is it that you really need? And what is it that someone can provide so that we could say they are encouraging you as per the biblical text? Remember, God comforts the downcast. So I'm interested in how God does this. And what does God mean when he talks about comforting those who are downcast? Let's begin by talking about what it does not mean. Let me talk about comforting and encouraging others. What does it not mean? First of all, it doesn't mean assuring one that their problems are not their fault. There may be times that needs to be done. But some have the idea that encouragement means you rush to someone who has problems and you just assure them it's not their fault. I need encouragement. I've quit serving the Lord. And I wish somebody would come and encourage me. Meaning, I wish somebody would come and tell me it's not my fault. It's the church's fault is the reason I'm not serving the Lord. I wish somebody would come and pat me on the back and say, you're in the right here. You're taking the high road because you've quit because those people are not doing what they should be doing. That's not encouragement. Not as per the biblical text. Furthermore, encouragement is not taking full responsibility for another spiritual condition. You don't rush to someone who is downcast, and maybe they're downcast, maybe because of their own sin, and you take full responsibility. I'm so sorry you're in this condition. We probably contributed to this in your circumstance. Well, maybe you did. Maybe you didn't. But that's not encouragement as per the text. Nor is encouragement staying all positive. You may say, I want to be an encouragement to somebody, so I'm going to be all positive. I'll never mention anything negative. I don't want to ever talk about what's wrong or criticize at all, but I want to be all positive and I want to be an encouragement. Barnabas wasn't that way. So what does it mean to encourage? Well, we're going to give some evidence that it simply means this. Now, there are other things involved, but it means to enable another to meet their difficulty with confidence. I'm going to read that again for you in case you missed it. If you're going to encourage somebody who's discouraged, maybe like Numbers 21, things got a little rougher. We take a different course than we had planned. Encouragement simply means that you're going to enable them to meet their difficulty with confidence. That's exactly what was needed in Numbers 21. Suddenly things take a different direction. Edom will not let us pass. The road gets more difficult. It gets a little rougher. This is not what we planned. I got into this and I thought we were headed to the promised land and we're taking a journey I didn't think I'd take. But I have to go there if I'm going to make it to the promised land. Encouragement enables them to meet that challenge with confidence. We can make it. We will make it around Edom. We will make it up the other side. We will make it to the promised land, and we will enter into the land, and we'll meet the promises of God. That's what encouragement would do. That's what they needed. Let's turn to Colossians chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. And I want to suggest to you that from Colossians 2, Paul had faced some struggles. And Paul's struggle served as an encouragement to others. How so? Let's see. For I want you to know what great conflict I had for you and those of Laodicea. And for as many as have not seen my face in the flesh, I want you to understand that I have been through some struggles. And I did it for you. I want you to know that. Why is Paul telling them that? I want you to feel sorry for me? No. He wants that to help them. Look at verse 2. He said that their hearts may be encouraged. And we'll come back to that text in a moment. But I want you to know about my struggles. He said, I want you to know about my struggles because it encourages you and it encourages others to know of my struggles, he said. Let's listen to Barclay on his comments on Colossians 2 and verse 2. Barclay is a commentator, but he is more of a word student than he is a commentator, at least at this juncture. And he helps us to understand this idea of the comfort and encouragement of Colossians 2 and in verse 2. He said, Paul prays that their hearts may be encouraged. The word he uses here is parakleion. Sometimes that word means comfort, sometimes to exhort. But always behind it is the idea of enabling a person to meet some difficult situation bravely with confidence. You get the picture? I'm going to read the rest of that. He's saying the word means, when Paul said, I want to be of encouragement to you, it means to exhort. It means to comfort. But behind all of that is this idea of enabling the person to meet the difficulty bravely and with confidence. One of the Greek historians uses it in the most interesting and thought-provoking way. That is, a Greek regiment which had lost heart and utterly dejected, the general sent a leader to talk to it with purpose that its courage was reborn and the body of the spirited man was lifted again to heroic action. That is what parakleion means here. It is Paul's prayer the church may be filled with that courage which can cope with any situation. You see what he's saying? When Paul said, I went through struggles and I want that to encourage you, what does that mean? I hope that gives you the confidence that you can face your trials and your circumstance and your tribulations with confidence that you're going to make it through that. That's what it means to encourage. Now, Vine comments upon this. Vine says that same word means to call to one's side, to call to one's aid. Literally, it means you call someone to your side and to your aid. Usually with a particular effect, that is, you're trying to produce a particular effect. You call them to your side so you can have an impact or an effect upon them. Like what? Like the idea of comfort, exhortation, or desire, etc. That is, you call them to your side so that you can comfort them, so you can encourage them, so you can enable them to face their difficulties with confidence. That's what it means to encourage. Now that I know a little bit about what encouragement means, it's not just merely a pat on the back, hey, you're doing good. It's not merely, you're not to blame here, everybody else is to blame. It's trying to get them with confidence to face their challenges that they have. Now, we're going to spend the bulk of our time now talking about how one is encouraged. And we're going to find biblical texts that tell us how they're encouraged. How is one encouraged? Well, let's start in Acts 15 now. You say, I'm discouraged. And there's times that I get, especially with spiritual things, I just get frustrated. Let's go to Acts 15. And let's look at the context of what encouraged these people. And let's see what that was and what took place. I want you to see that one can be encouraged by the clarity of revelation in the midst of controversy. Go to Acts 15. If you're not already there, let's get there. Acts 15. What's the controversy? There was a problem at Antioch. According to verses 1 and 2, some false teachers came in and they were teaching that circumcision was binding. Now, you say, well, that's That's simple. We all know that. This was in a context. Put it in historical context when Gentiles are just coming into the church. And this is a big controversy. Can we let the Gentiles come in when they haven't been circumcised because everyone we know is in the church already has been circumcised? What are we going to do? Some false teachers came along and said they have to be circumcised or we can't let them in. There was an uproar and Paul and Barnabas were there. Remember Barnabas? He's right in the middle of that, verses 1 and 2. They go to Jerusalem to talk to the elders and the apostles about the matter. And so they do. So let's make our way through the Acts 15. What happens beginning at verse 6? The apostles and elders came together to consider the matter. This is not a taking a vote of the process. They try to examine what God has revealed on the question. So Peter stands up and he makes a speech, verses 7 through 11, and he appeals to necessary inference, or here is a circumstance from which I necessarily inferred this is God's revelation on this. When Cornelius was accepted, he wasn't demanded to be circumcised, not necessarily infer by the miracles that surrounded that God doesn't demand circumcision. Verse 12, Paul and Barnabas made a second speech and they talked about the example of the cases of conversion on the first missionary journey. And the miracles gave God's stamp of approval. From that we conclude from this approved example that God indeed has said circumcision is not binding. A third speech was made, and that was James making a speech appealing from a direct statement from Amos, Amos 9, that the Gentiles could call upon his name and be saved. So what did they do? They consulted the revelation of God by looking at a command, an example, and a necessary inference. But I'm not so much interested in that as I am when I come down to verse 22. It pleased the apostles and elders and the whole church to send chosen men to Antioch. We're going to send some men back over to Antioch where this problem had arisen. And verse 23, we're going to send a letter over there. What does the letter say? The letter is going to say that we apostles never gave, verse 24, any such commandment. The conclusion we have come to is the conclusion circumcision is not binding. Now, how'd they come to that conclusion? Verse 28, for it seemed good to the Holy Spirit. They said the Holy Spirit is the one who directed this. How'd they know what the Holy Spirit thought? By looking at a command, example, or inference. We looked at the revelation of God and we concluded the Holy Spirit said this, that circumcision is not binding. All right, are you with me now? Let's look at verse 30. So they sent them off and they came to Antioch and they gathered the multitude together and delivered the letter. Now let's stop there for a moment. I don't know about you, but you probably would be discouraged if there was an uproar in the local church. Somebody was teaching something and some are taking one side, some are taking another, and there's a lot of argument going on. You might even get discouraged and quit. Said, I want to go to some other church where there's not all this controversy. There was great controversy in Acts 15, 1 and 2. In fact, look at verse 2, let's go back to verse 2. There was no small dissension. It means it was a pretty heated uproar at Antioch. When they got the letter, verse 31, when they read it, they rejoiced over its encouragement. It's encouragement. This was a doctrinal matter that was being discussed. What he did was simply, what they pointed out was, here is the clarity of the revelation of God in the midst of this controversy, and that caused encouragement. I want to tell you, there'd be some people, if we had controversy over something, say, like the 80-70 doctrine, somebody rose up and began to teach it. And we even had to have a public discussion where we refute the error and show clear from the scriptures that that error is false. Somebody would be discouraged, saying, I don't like all this controversy. I want to tell you, when you see the clear revelation of God in the midst of controversy, verse 31 says, that is encouraging. When you see the clear revelation of God in the midst of controversy, that is encouraging. This church was encouraged about that. How did it encourage them? Number one, now they know what's right. Now they know which side is right. Now they know what they are demanded to do and not do. They now have a clear picture of what God expects. Nobody's going to condemn these Gentiles for not being circumcised and confuse them because now they have the clear revelation from God. The clear revelation in the midst of controversy is encouraging. While we're in Acts, let's go to the 16th division and notice at verse 40. I want to suggest to you that we are encouraged by being with those who focus on others and not themselves. Before we get there, we're going to set the context. So Don't even get to verse 40. There's no need till we set the context. Before we even go to the context, may I ask you or suggest to you, have you ever been around people who, no matter what the circumstance is, whether you're in your home or their home or you're out on the street or in the store, and you visit with them, their focus is always on themselves. And as they focus on themselves, they're complaining about things about themselves. It's a woe is me. I've got it bad. Nobody has it worse than me. Nobody works harder than me. Nobody has more struggles than me. Woe is me. Feel sorry for me. Feel sorry for me because I have it so bad. They're focused on me. How encouraged were you around that? Not much. You want to be encouraged? Be around those who focus on others and not focusing on themselves. Let me give you an example of that. Right here in Acts 16. Paul and Silas are in prison. You remember that? For the preaching and the teaching of the truth. They haven't done anything wrong. It was this circumstance where the Philippian jailer was converted. So right here in Acts 16, you remember, after they'd been in prison, verse 35, the officers came and released them. Now remember, a little bit earlier, they had converted Lydia and her household. They're new converts. Paul and Barnabas are not, or Paul and Silas are not, but Lydia and her household are new converts. And so is the jailer. Now they're let out of prison. Now verse 40, with that in the context. So they went out of prison and entered the house of Lydia, and when they had came and seen the brethren, they told the brethren how bad they had it in prison. Is that what it says? Oh, y'all don't know how bad it was over there in prison. You don't know how bad I was treated over there in prison. Y'all just be glad you weren't taken to prison like we've been taken to prison. And let me tell you how bad it was. That's not what they did. Look at verse 40. Verse 40 said, when they'd seen the brethren, they encouraged them and departed. What did I tell you about Paul and Barnabas? Paul and Barnabas weren't focusing on Paul and Barnabas. Paul and Barnabas encouraged others by focusing on them rather than focusing on themselves. Listen to me carefully. Listen to me carefully. You want to be an encouragement to others, you say, I'd like to be an encouragement. Focus on them and don't focus on yourself. Focus on them and not on yourself. Go and tell someone your woe is me story and you're not encouraging them at all. You focus on them and not on yourself. That's what happened right here with Paul and Barnabas. You want to be encouraged? Find you some people that focus on others and not themselves. Spend less time around those who are singing woe is me and you'll be encouraged. Here's another passage. While we're in Acts, let's go to Acts 27. And we're going to look at verse 36, but before we get there, let's set its context. You remember in Acts 27, they were in the midst of a storm. And before a revelation comes from God, they think they're going to die. Even Paul's companions thought they were going to die. Paul should have known they weren't going to die because God had already given them a promise he's going to go to Rome. But Luke said at verse 20, this is Luke now, the author of the book said, all hope was finally given up. We were goners, he said. But, verse 23, Paul said, an angel of God stood by him and said, do not be afraid, verse 24, you'll be brought before Caesar, and indeed all those who are with you. And he said to the men on the boat, therefore I believe God, verse 25, that it shall be just as he told me. The storm's still raging. God just revealed to me that there's not going to be a single loss of life at all. Not a single person will die in the midst of the storm. Well, let's go a little bit further. There were those who tried to escape. Paul said, no, you're going to have to stay. Verse 31, unless the men stay on the ship, you cannot be saved. And as it was day, I'm reading beginning at verse 33. As it was about to dawn, Paul imploring them to take food. Today is the 14th day. But you have waited and continued without food, eating nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is your survival, since not a hair will fall from your head of any of you. Not a one of you are going to die. We know that from the promise of God. Not a one of you are going to die. You got that? So you might as well eat and take nourishment, because that's how you're going to survive. And when he had said these things, they took bread and gave thanks in the presence of them all. And they'd broken it and began to eat. Now, that's not the Lord's Supper. They're eating a common meal. They gave thanks and they're beginning to eat one with the other. Notice verse 36. Then they were all encouraged and took food themselves. What do you learn from that? I learn by being assured of the promises in the midst of the storm is encouraging. They're in the midst of the storm, and it looks like Luke said, we were goners. I thought we were going under and never come back. But being reminded of the promise of God, you're going to Rome, and those that are with you are going to go to Rome, and not a one of you are going to die. And 14 days have passed in the storm, and they still haven't died. And Paul says, we're not going to die. I told you we weren't. But you've got to eat to survive. And now they're all encouraged. How are they encouraged? By being reminded of the promises of God in the midst of the storm. Now, you may not ever be in a shipwreck, but I want to tell you, you may face a storm that is a financial storm. When that financial storm hits, you need to be reminded of the promises of God. It might be a health storm that hits you. It might be a family disaster that hits you. That's the storm that's in your family. It may be relationships that are coming apart. It may at one point be a social or political uproar, as some countries around the world have faced. Whatever your storm may be, being reminded of the promises of God in the midst of the storm is encouraging. Here's something else. Let's go to the book of Romans. How is one encouraged? How is one encouraged? Look at Romans 1 and in verse 12. Paul is writing to the church at Rome. He had been there before. He loved these brethren. He knew them. And he's longing to be back with them. And he said at verse 11, for I long to see you that I might impart some spiritual gifts so that you may be established. That is, that I may be encouraged together with you by the mutual faith both of you and me. What are you saying, Paul? I'm saying when I get over there to Rome, I hope to be an encouragement to them, and I hope they will be an encouragement to me. What makes you think y'all will be encouraging to one another? Because of our mutual faith. I think that's what's going to be encouraging. What's he saying? We're encouraged by being with those who are faithful. You want to be encouraged? Spend some time with those who are the people of God and you'll be encouraged. Spend some time with those who are the people of God and you'll be encouraged. And then spend some more time with the people of God and you'll be encouraged. So look again. Let's go to the book of Philippians, if you will. Let's go to the Philippians chapter 2 and in verse 9. 19, excuse me. Philippians 2 and in verse 19. Now, Paul is talking about not exactly the same kind of circumstance of Romans 1, but he's sending Timothy. And he said, I trust to send Timothy to you shortly that I may be encouraged when I know of your state. Same point to be made, but I'm going to send Timothy. And Timothy's going to find out how you're doing. He's going to see about your faith and the strength of your faith. And when I get a good report from Timothy, that's going to encourage me. You know what that tells me? When I spend time with the faithful and I see how they're doing and I see their faith and I see their diligence, that's encouraging. Let's go to again Colossians 2. We're going to spend a little more time in Colossians 2. We already have. Colossians 2 and in verse 2. He said, remember, he struggled, verse 1. Now verse 2, that their hearts may be encouraged, being knit together in love. There is a connection with his encouragement and their hearts being knit together in love. I want to tell you, there are people who sometimes say, you know what, I am discouraged. And they hit about half of the assemblies. Well, no wonder you're discouraged. You're not with the faithful. Or I get discouraged, feel left out. And then when there's social things going on, that's done on an individual basis, of course, but when there's social settings, they're not there. But I'm so discouraged. I'm discouraged. I'm going to tell you, you want to be encouraged? Be in the assembly where the saints are. Watch this. Listen carefully. Stick around and visit a little bit. You want to be encouraged? Spend some time visiting with the brethren. Getting to know who they are. Talking with them. You're not going to see their faith necessarily because they're sitting in the pew next to you, but as you talk to them, you may hear something that tells you what they went through that tells you of their faith. Spend some time. When brethren get together, you want to be encouraged? One of the ways of being encouraged is be with those who are faithful. Quite often, we have get-togethers or we have something that's social setting, and there are those who would rather spend more time with those who are non-Christians than with the faithful, and then they're the ones who become discouraged. No wonder. Paul said, I'm going to be encouraged by the mutual faith, both of me and of you. But here's something else. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 14. Very similar to the first point, but different. What we talked about in the first point is the clarity of revelation in the midst of controversy. When there's controversy that is sometimes discouraging and is distracting, we are encouraged by the clarity of the revelation. But what I'm learning from 1 Corinthians 14 here is just by learning the revelation of God, I'm encouraged. One says, I'm discouraged. I really need encouragement. Why weren't you in the Bible class? Why weren't you in Bible class? You could get some encouragement there, I would think. Where were you Sunday night? You could get some encouragement there. Where were you Wednesday night? Couldn't you get some encouragement there? When somebody has a Bible study in their home and they invite you, why don't you go? Because you can get some encouragement there. You say, how do you know? Let's look at 1 Corinthians 14:31. 1 Corinthians 14 is in the context of the misunderstanding concerning spiritual gifts. There were some who thought the most important gift was that of tongues because it was exciting. Paul labored in the first five verses saying, that's not what's really important, is the excitement. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but it's whether or not it reveals the will of God, because there's where you get your edification. So let's look at verse 3 first, and then we're going to come to verse 31. Look at verse 3. He says, but he who prophesies speaks edification and exhortation and comfort to men. When there is prophecy, in contrast to tongues without interpretation, there is exhortation and comfort. How? Because it deals with the revelation of God. Now verse 31. Chapter 14, verse 31. But you all can prophesy one by one that all may learn and all may be encouraged. How are you going to be encouraged, Paul? They're going to be encouraged when they hear the revelation of God from prophecy. They're going to be encouraged because they're receiving the revelation of God. What do I learn from that? I'm encouraged by learning the revelation of God. When I see what God's will is, and I receive the revelation from God, I'm encouraged. My faith is built up. Let's go to another passage along the same line. Romans 15 and in verse 4. Romans 15 and 4. Paul said, whatever things are written aforetime, that's the Old Testament, were written for our learning, that we through patience, perseverance in other words, and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. What's he saying? The Old Testament was written for you to read and study. Not to live by, but to read and study. Well, what am I going to get from that? I'm going to get endurance is one thing, because I see how Moses endured, I see how Abraham endured, I see how Job endured, and that's going to encourage me to do the same thing. That we through perseverance and the comfort or encouragement of the Scriptures. You know what it's going to do? It's going to enable me to continue my battle with confidence. There's our definition of encouragement. That's his point. Where'd I get that? The comfort of the Scriptures. Spend time with the Scriptures if you want to be encouraged. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians 4:18, then we'll move to the next one. You remember the, perhaps this may even fit better with the first point, but there was a misunderstanding at Thessalonica concerning the second coming, whether or not it was going to be imminent, and that was part of the thing. It's picking in the second letter, but in the first letter, there was this misunderstanding about those who have died before the second coming. Are they going to be at a disadvantage at the second coming? They're already dead in the grave. They're going to be at a disadvantage, and Paul explained, no, they're not at a disadvantage at all. They'll all be joined together and meet the Lord in the air. You remember what the text says. But he concludes that saying this, therefore comfort one another with these words. What words? The words just given by inspiration. The words just given by revelation. You comfort one another with these words. So when somebody's disturbed about a question like this one was, take the revelation of God and it comforts them is the point. One more thing along that line and then we'll go to our last and third point. Let's go to Colossians 2 and in verse 2. I'm encouraged by having and using wisdom. I said we keep coming back to Colossians 2, so let's go one more time, one last time to Colossians 2. And in verse 2. Paul said, remember his conflict, verse 1. that their hearts may be encouraged, being knit together in love, attaining to all riches and full assurance of understanding. There is a connection here between this encouragement they need and they will receive and understanding or wisdom. Let's go to Barclay again, defining the word. Paul here uses three words for wisdom. In verse 2, he uses sunesis, which the Revised Standard Version translates understanding. We've already seen in the discussion of Colossians 1 that sunesis is what we might call critical knowledge, or we may call it wisdom. It is the ability to assess any situation to decide what is the practical course of action that is necessary within it, a real church that has practical knowledge of what action is called for. In other words, when you have some wisdom that you know, here is the right course to take, here is the right course of action, here is the right application of that principle, here is the best judgment, which is what Colossians 1:9, by the way, is about. And you use that wisdom, that's encouraging. When somebody gives you wisdom, wisdom can come from someone who's had some experience. Laban said, I have learned by experience. Remember that? I've learned by experience. When somebody gives you a gem of wisdom and you follow that wisdom and it works in your favor, you are encouraged by that. When you receive wisdom from the scriptures, like, for example, Proverbs 18 and in verse 13 or verse 17, he that is first to defend his cause seems right until his neighbor comes and examines him. The wisdom says, you know what, don't buy that side till I hear the other side. That gives you encouragement. That gives you encouragement. When you have wisdom and you use that wisdom. Now here's the last thing we'll talk about and we won't spend much time here. I know what encouragement means, what it means to encourage somebody. Now I've listed a number of scriptures wherein God tells us here's how people are encouraged. But here's a principle we need to think about. It's possible that we could be refusing to be encouraged. Now watch this carefully because I'm going to build off of a principle. And it's possible to refuse encouragement. The Bible talks about some who refuse comfort. I know that's not talking about the same thing. I understand that. That's where I want to build on a principle. Do you remember when Joseph's dad, Jacob, was told that they'd lied to him, that the sons lied to him and told him their son was dead? You know, here's the garment, and they dipped it in the animal's blood and said, your son's been killed. Remember that? They lied to him. He thought his son was dead. He wasn't. But in his mind, it's all the same. His son's dead in his mind. And friends and family tried to comfort him. And this text in Genesis 37 says he refused to be comforted. Remember that? He refused to be comforted. There was nothing that could be said to make it better. He didn't want to be comforted. He wanted time to mourn. He wanted time to weep. The psalmist talks about the same thing. Jeremiah 31 is fulfilled in Matthew 2 when there was the massacre of the children at the birth of Jesus, that they could not be comforted because of the great slaughter. They refused to be comforted. Nothing could be said to make it better. And here's what I learned from that. I learned that comfort and encouragement has to be accepted and received. So if I'm facing a challenge in my life and I have to go around Edom that I didn't want to go around and I'm grumbling and complaining and on the verge of quitting and you come to encourage me and tell me, you know what, you can make it. This is just a bump in the road. You can make it around. God's made His promise. You can do that. I have to accept and receive that encouragement for it to do me any good. That's the point. Just like you have to receive comfort for it to do any good. Now, I want to suggest as we close that there are some people who stay discouraged because they refuse encouragement. You may not be able to read the small print, but I put back up here the 6 points that we just made about how people are encouraged. How are people encouraged? Well, by clarity of the revelation in the midst of controversy, by being around those who focus on others and not themselves, by being assured of the promises in the storm, etc., as we just went through. How could people refuse to be encouraged? They may not like what the revelation says. You go to somebody who's down and discouraged, and you say, well, here's what God said about that, and you show them, and they may not like what God said. Could you imagine being over at Antioch? And you are wanting to insist on circumcision, and you get this letter from the apostles that says it's not binding, and you don't accept it, you probably wouldn't be encouraged. You don't like that. No, I'm not encouraged by that. In fact, I'm kind of frustrated by that. So sometimes people won't receive encouragement because they don't like the revelation of God. They don't like what the text actually says. Some stay discouraged because they don't want to focus on others. I'm discouraged. And they spend time around those who sing, woe is me. And the next person they run to is the person who sings, woe is me. And they don't focus on others, and they're not around others who focus on others. They refuse to be encouraged. You got to accept it. You got to receive it. Some stay discouraged because they don't want to be with the faithful. I'm discouraged. I just don't get any encouragement. I get so discouraged living the Christian life. Well, who you been spending your time with? Who you running with? Who your friends? When people are gathering together, where do you go and cast your lot? Where are you going? Some people refuse encouragement. They refuse it. I don't want to be a part of that. Some don't want to go in the direction that's difficult. Remember going around Edom? That's where you're going to have to go. If you're going to go, you can't go through Edom. You're going to have to go around Edom. But I don't want to go around Edom. I want to go through it. Well, that ain't going to happen. Well, you want to go to the promised land? Yeah, but I don't want to go around Edom, though. Well, you're going to have to if you're going to make it. And the person who says, you know what, I don't want to do the difficult. I wanted to go the easy route. Is a person who refused to be encouraged. And a person who doesn't want to use wisdom. They don't want to follow wisdom. They don't want to use wisdom. Is a person who refuses to be encouraged. Barnabas was the son of encouragement. Don't you wish we had a bunch of Barnabases around? When we face discouragement, we could run to Barnabas and say, Barnabas, help us out here. I'm discouraged. Barnabas would probably at times pat you on the back and tell you you're going in the right direction. There'd be other times Barnabas may say, you're wrong. I'm going to tell you something. You're wrong. You're just flat wrong in what you did. And he'd turn around and fix it. What we've seen today is what it means to encourage, how one is encouraged, and refusing to be encouraged. Sometimes we do that very thing. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and sing?